No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another Red Sox Bastards of Boston Hot Stove edition of the podcast. Have a few, I don't want to call them developments, but a few rumors, innuendo, stuff like that to go over as winter meetings is kicking off. The Braves made the first move on Sunday night, trading for Jared Kelenic and Marco Gonzalez from the Mariners, and sent some prospects back in that package. So pretty significant. Nothing else major has happened since then. But so we're going to get into some stuff. Seth Lugo, apparently there's some rumblings. The Red Sox could be interested in him. We will discuss that. Some comments on from Craig Breslow today on what they're really focusing on, and it's actually has more to do with the trade market. So Micah Storms with me tonight. Micah, how are you?
I'm doing good, Terry. I'm dying for some crazy news and just fast paced signings, and we haven't gotten that. It's the lull, and it's just I'm tired of, you know, this person may be connected with this team. It drives me nuts. I want news. I want signings. Baseball needs that, and I don't know if they have to change how they do things in the off season, but it just there's no excitement right now. I've read a couple people on Twitter who are actually at the winter meetings, and people are just describing it as dead right now, which is a shame.
Yeah, we still have, I think, 2 full days left, so we'll see what happens there. Charlie Smith also with us tonight. How are you, Charlie?
I'm doing okay, but similar to what Micah just said, echoing the sentiment, it's been boring. It's been sad. It feels like COVID when baseball just was canceled and there was no sports and no fun and no vaccine. It was just wild. And, you know, now there's a vaccine, but there's still no baseball. And the little bits of baseball that we are getting is just, you know, rumors, but nothing concrete. And if it's anything concrete, it's for other teams, not ours.
Yeah, I feel like there was more action last November in 2022. The Eduardo Rodriguez guys kind of came off quick. And, you know, every time I complain about the lack of action on social media, everyone's like, it never happens before the winter meetings. That's not true. But I can't fight everybody. So, all right. So Craig Breslow did meet with the media today. And it seems like their primary focus right now, unequivocally, is they are seeking a young, controllable starting pitcher. And the name that was mentioned, especially in the report by Mass Live's Sean McAdam, was Logan Gilbert. He's basically, I think, the number two in Seattle. I think Kirby would be considered their ace, if I'm not mistaken. But Gilbert is, I think, 26 years old, pitched 3 years in the majors, 32 starts a year the last couple of years, which is pretty good. Had an ERA a little under four. I think he had like a 3.87 ERA. He seems to be getting better and better as he goes. He's got 4 years remaining on his deal. And the other key note in there is that Breslow said no prospects are untouchable. So some of Heim Bloom's precious prospects could get dealt. I'm not thrilled with that, but Micah, what do you think of this mentality? You know, they've got plenty of money to spend, but what's your interpretation of what's going on and what would you like to see?
Well, right now the starting pitching market is kind of stuck in limbo. So while players are not going to, they're not currently signing. And I feel like the Red Sox kind of, Breslow kind of knows how fast this is going to move. I like the idea of exploring the trade market while you're waiting. You know, there's no reason not to. And if the Red Sox could acquire a pitcher like Gilbert, then I think you kind of shift your focus because you have a number two type starter, and maybe you don't need to go out and get two starting pitchers. You only need to go out and get one in free agency. But if you don't acquire a pitcher like Gilbert via trade, then you probably do have to go out and get two pitchers via free agency. So I like the idea of them exploring the trade market. I would be absolutely thrilled if they were able to acquire Logan Gilbert. I am all on board. You have to give up something of quality to get something of quality. And if it meant parting with Roman Anthony to acquire Gilbert, I would 100% do that. I think Gilbert is the real deal. He's a workhorse early in his career. This is the type of pitcher that the Red Sox have not been able to develop. And if you can't develop them and you don't want to spend $200+ million in free agency, then you have to trade for him. And I just hope that he actually is somewhat available and on the market, because I just kind of scratch my head as to why Seattle would be willing to move him, because I think he's a really good pitcher.
Charlie.
I'm also very curious. The Seattle Mariners have one of the more exciting, you know, 1-2s in the sense of Logan Gilbert and George Kirby. So getting rid of half of that two-headed monster almost doesn't make sense unless they know something that we don't. So it's like, did AJ Preller move to Seattle and is he trying to make some dirty moves now for them? It seems very interesting. And Mike took the words out of my mouth. Are we willing to get rid of or send players away to get Logan Gilbert, a 13 game winner 2 years in a row, someone who's kept it under four for 2 years in a row and is a horse? The guy's averaging, you know, just under 200 innings over the last two seasons. He is only 26 years. He does have, you did mention, I believe, 4 years of control. This year is going to be arbitration one for him, ARB one, I believe. For Logan Gilbert?
I think it would be with 3 years to go, if I'm not mistaken.
Three to go? I apologize. I thought it was four. But it's interesting. If you get Gilbert and Seattle says, well, we want Mayer, are you saying yes to that?
It sounds like Breslow would, and I don't know if I covet...
Exactly.
I don't know if I covet Marcelo Meyer, who might miss all of 2024, by the way, with shoulder surgery. That hasn't been ruled out. So he's not doing any type of program right now. That wouldn't affect my willingness to trade him. I mean, I'm fine if he has surgery and we keep him. I'm good with that. It's just going to be an extra year. But Roman Anthony, I mean, he could conceivably be a late season call up, you know, because he's been in college for a few years and already right after being drafted by us, he's already up to double A. So not saying it would happen, but I mean, Jacoby Ellsbury was in double A in the summer of 2007 and then was a stud in the playoffs later that year. So who knows, but I don't know who I covet the most. Meyer's a righty. Anthony is a lefty. So that kind of makes Meyer a better fit for this lineup, but any of them are tradable. And I've never been of the mentality of trading prospects, especially when you have that much money available to spend. I would love to find, you know, well, number one, I mean, I want Yamamoto, but if that doesn't happen, I'd rather sign pitchers for 3 or 4 years. Even if the annual money's a little big, I'm fine with it because that's a short-term risk. And, you know, and then you can hopefully develop, you know, some of the pitchers we have and develop some of the position players we have, because those guys are going to keep our payroll cheap anyway. So I'm not asking for, outside of Yamamoto, I'm not asking to go spend at the top of the market. I'm not asking for a Soto trade and an extension. We'll get to him shortly, but that's not where I want to live. You know, if Costas is a stud, Devers continues to be a stud, maybe we pick up, I mean, maybe the outfield prospects there, Duran, drawing a big time blank. Who's the other lefty outfielder? Young kid, called him up in the summer, got him in the Astros.
You're talking about
I'm brain farting.
Abreu,
yes, Willy Abreu.
Yeah, okay.
You know, one of those guys will have a very productive season, I feel like, or Rafaela. I just don't want to deplete the farm. And then still be like a couple years away from a championship potentially. I don't like this direction. And when you're talking about the pitching market, you're already hearing comparisons that Breslow is just like Bloom. Breslow is just like Bloom with the pitching market. Yet he might deal from a relatively healthy farm now. And I don't know. I don't see how it's all going to fit. Now, if we trade for Logan Gilbert, if it happens, and then either Meyer or Anthony are in the deal, you're going to have another prospect you probably don't want to trade in that deal, because that's what happens when you trade for a guy with 4 years of control left. But if you get Logan Gilbert and then you land Yamamoto, okay, all right, let's talk about winning the division now, because I think that's where we're trending. You know, you'd have to make a couple of moves. Like I said, you got to balance that lineup a little better than it is. You need a right-handed bat somehow. I'm still going to pray for Randy Arozarena. He's my guy. You know, very slim chance it happens, but
you think the Red Sox are going to trade for Randy Arozarena?
Well, he's a right-handed bat that solves a lot of problems. I mean, the Yankees want...
Solves every problem.
Exactly. And there is talk of him possibly being dealt, not necessarily to us, but him and Glasnow are, you know, making a lot of money now with arbitration. So, you know, who knows? Everyone says, oh, you don't trade within the division. Well, the Rays kind of have to. They have to get the best deal they can because they're a small market team. And if the Red Sox offer a better deal than the, you know, the San Diego Padres, or that's probably not the best example, or the, you know, the Marlins or whatever, then they have to take our package. So I'll see. It's just frustrating, you know, to not really have a good sense of what's going to happen.
Terry, you said, you know, you would be all for 3 to 4 year deals. And I agree with you. That would be ideal. But
when you are working within the free agent market, that's just really not a thing. Like the types of pitchers that you're going to get are Sonny Gray, those type of arms. And I just don't think those solve a lot of the Red Sox problems, because Sonny Gray isn't a front of the rotation arm to solve the problem. I think a Yamamoto or even a Jordan Montgomery, if you were to put one of those two guys and, you know, partner them up with Logan Gilbert, I think then you kind of have something there to really, you know, lead your rotation. I think that's what's needed. I think one of those two guys and then a trade for Gilbert. And then all of a sudden, I think you really have a rotation to really build on and move forward with. That's what I would like to see them do. Obviously Yamamoto would be number one and it's not even close. And when you said it's frustrating not knowing what is really going on, I frankly don't think anybody knows what's going on. I don't think any of the big time reporters have a clue of what the real feel is, because once somebody makes a move, it's going to cause a team to go into desperation mode and they're going to jump in and they weren't even reported. And it's going to happen. And this team showing interest, I don't think anybody really has a clue right now because of the uncertainty around Ohtani and Yamamoto. Nobody really knows what those two are going to do.
If we could have got a Sonny Gray type guy, and then I don't know who would be another decent arm. I'd hate to, you know, a guy of Stroman's ability without the, you know, the propensity for hissy fits would be a good guy. So if you had Bayo, Sonny Gray, and then another guy in that category, if you could get Montgomery without the massive premium, let's say it's a 4 or 5 year deal, those three right there, Bayo, Sonny Gray, Montgomery, that's about as good, I think, as the 2013 Red Sox. Maybe even a little bit better if Bayo takes even a half a step forward from next year. So I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that for year one of the Breslow era. You can always make a trade or a move. Now, don't get me wrong. I do want Yamamoto. I'm not softening on that. I'm like hardcore. If anything, I'm kind of resigned to the idea it might not happen. You know, there's not a lot of momentum behind the Red Sox right now, and maybe that's what they want us to think, and then maybe they're going to swoop in and get it done. But yeah, so I don't think we're going to end up where we wanted to, you know, in September. You know, when Heimblum gets fired, we read the tweets, we're like, oh yeah, we're going to have some awesome pitching next year. I don't know that we're gonna be where we thought we might be at that point. Charlie, you want to jump in?
I mean, it's just been, I don't think anyone thought we'd be where we are right now, to be completely honest. I mean, a month ago or even the day before Chaim Bloom was let go, we all thought we were going to be in this for a whole nother year, where it was going to be, you know, jumping in front of traffic with, you know, blindfolds on. I still think we have to try to be a little bit optimistic, even though everything surrounding Yamamoto hasn't been totally exciting for Red Sox fans. But I mean, everything you read, if you look up a major name, the Red Sox aren't the top team, and it's been really sad. But we have to try to be a little bit optimistic. There's no way the team can be worse than they were last year. That's the bottom line with the additions and changes that we have to make.
I meant to go through the Mariners rotation real quick. This is what it looks like. Luis Castillo, Logan Gilbert is in there presently. Then you have George Kirby, Bryce Miller, Brian Wu. So you can make the case that maybe they do have a little bit of wiggle room there to make a trade if they desperately want to boost their offense. But we'll see. Let's pivot real quick here. Seth Lugo was mentioned today. Red Sox possibly connected to him. Not a sexy name. I don't remember who was on with me that show when he came up on that top 50 list. He probably would have been in the second or third show, rather. So that would have been part three or four. Basically, he hasn't really been healthy until last year. In late 2017, he had a slight tear of his UCL. They didn't do surgery on it. He pitched the whole, I think he might have pitched a couple seasons, actually. And then he had bone chips taken out of his elbow. Nathan Eovaldi had that same problem in 2019, missed like 4 or 5 months. And since then, he's actually been okay. That surgery happened, I think, in 2021. And so he did pitch a full season in 2023. I think it was 146 innings. I'm pulling this thing up right now. His numbers across the board last year actually look pretty good. His strikeout per nine was 8.6. That's decently above league average. His walk per nine was just 2.2. For comparison, Blake Snell won the Cy Young with a 5.0 walk per nine. Now, that's an anomaly. You probably won't see that again for a while. But, you know, those numbers are pretty good. His ERA, 3.83. Not bad. So, to me, those are Jordan Montgomery-type numbers, really. And you'd be getting him at a discount. He is 3 or 4 years older than Montgomery. I think Lugo just turned 34. So, I wouldn't hate the deal. He still has to be the number two to me. There has to be a bigger plan, whether it's trading for Gilbert or signing Yamamoto. But Charlie, go ahead.
I am so out on Seth Lugo. Okay. I want no part of Seth Lugo. Okay. What am I going to say, Terry?
I don't know, Charlie. I'm not saying I love it.
Here's the bad news, Terry.
Wait, hang on. You might talk me out of Lugo. That's how non-committal I am to him.
Okay, good. You don't strike me as someone who's big on commitments with baseball players here. Okay. 3 years, $42 million for a player that's been in the league for 8 seasons and only once has proven himself as a starter. That's his first red flag. Red flag number two, you've only just recently left the team that has one of the worst GMs in Major League Baseball. AJ Preller is right down there with like cow dung, awful GM, horrible person, wish he would get arrested, can't catch a cold. It's absolutely insane. I don't know how we're justifying the injury past and the fact that we tried doing what they did with Seth Lugo with multiple pitchers and it hasn't worked out. Yes, he had an ERA of 3.57. Yes, he had 26 appearances from the starting rotation, more than almost his entire career combined. I still want no part of it, none whatsoever. I'm so out on this. A 34-year-old who's had 1 year of brief relevance, if you can even call it that, is getting 3 years, $42 million. Please, I'm so done. No, thank you.
Go ahead, Micah.
So I would be somewhat interested if I know, Charlie, just give me a second here, okay? I would be somewhat interested if he was pitcher number three that was acquired. Okay, so you have them. If say they acquire Montgomery, they trade for Gilbert, and then you sign Seth Lugo, I could live with that. Okay, but if he is fish number two that they acquire, I want no part of that. Now, what really does scare me is if you look at his numbers, 2019, 80 innings, 2020, 36, 2021, 46, 2022, 65.
Then he jumps up to 146 last year. So that scares me, because after a huge jump in his workload, what does he look like going into next season? Does he show some fatigue? Was he overworked last year? I mean, he's a 34-year-old who's coming off of the biggest workload of his entire career. I don't know if that's somebody you bet on. But again, if he was pitcher number three and you had guys like Cutter Crawford and, you know, other guys who could fill in for him, and you're not expecting, you know, 28 starts from him, I could possibly live with that. But the problem is, if you're paying him 3 and 42, you are kind of expecting him to make 20 to 25 starts. And I just don't know if you can guarantee that. So if the Red Sox signed him, if he was the first pitcher the Red Sox acquired this offseason, I would be super suspicious and concerned. If he was the third pitcher they acquired, I would be intrigued, because then I might be like, well, what are the plans with the other pieces? But 3 and 42 for a guy, like Charlie said, who doesn't have a track record, it seems like we could be going down the same type of rabbit holes that we saw the Red Sox go down in previous seasons, where they get very little from Corey Kluber, you know, pitchers like that. That would concern me that, you know, he makes 8 starts and is on the IL for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, let's throw in red flag number 4. From 2020 to 2022, 148 innings pitched. That's just under 50 innings expected. 146 and a third, to Micah's credit. This year, 8-7. Stellar. What a record for the San Diego Padres. 3 years prior, 10-9. This guy's getting 3 for 42. We are all in the wrong career path. We should all be professional pitchers if he's getting 3 for 42. Like, that's absolutely mental. He can't get 10 wins in a season.
So a couple things to consider here. I mean, last year was really the first season he could get stretched out as a starter. They did get 146 innings out of him. Also, interestingly, the Padres acquired their pitching coach from the Cleveland Guardians organization. So, I mean, they've been a top 3 or 4 organization for pumping out starting pitching. You know, Corey Kluber, Trevor Bauer, Mike Clevenger, Shane Bieber. You know, it's rich. Tristan McKenzie's had some injury history. Thanks, Charlie, for trading him to me on fantasy. But yeah, so they do have a penchant for that. And I don't think it's a huge coincidence that Lugo had a very good year under that pitching coach. 3 years, $42 million. I probably don't do that deal at that number. I'm more in the 2 year, maybe $32 million a year. I think that's a decent, you know, market value for a 34-year-old pitcher who still kind of needs to prove himself in terms of durability. So, and I'll say this, and granted the bar is low, but Lugo far and away better than anybody Chaim Bloom, you know, ever signed in 4 years. I mean, Michael Wacha was the best one. He had a trash season the year before we signed him. He only got good in the last 5 or 6 weeks when he found his changeup. So on paper, he didn't really have a great 2021 with the Rays. Corey Kluber was running on fumes by the time we signed him. Garrett Richards hadn't pitched a full season. So I think Lugo is a little bit better. I'm not saying I love it, because I don't, but we'll see. And then if nothing else happens after Lugo of substance, I'm going to hate the signing, that he was the prize. Go ahead, Charlie.
Lugo and prize, same sentence. Just no, let's stop that. That's just disrespectful. Last year, Zach Eflin was it 1 or 2 years in Tampa Bay for $13 million per?
3, and it was actually a little bit more. I think it was 3 years, $45 million.
Okay. So are we saying that Seth Lugo is worth $1 million less per year than Eflin, who struck out almost 200 guys, had 16 wins, you know, only twice as many as Lugo, had a better ERA, just an overall better pitcher? Are we saying that Seth Lugo is worth $14 million per? I would be shocked if he gets more than 12. That is such a reach for Lugo.
Now, to defend the Eflin signing, prior to that, he had two consecutive seasons where he had an ERA over 4, and the most innings he threw was 105. So what the Rays got out of Eflin, I think, was just incredible. I don't think anyone really expected him to have the year he had last year. So I don't know if I would compare Lugo to Eflin, but I do think you could compare Lugo to Waka. Who would you actually rather have? Because Trade Rumors has Waka for 3-36, and they have Lugo for 3-42. Last year, Waka made 24 starts, 134 innings, and he's going to be 32 this year. I feel like Waka is probably a safer bet to give you at least 120 innings, maybe 130. You know he's going to miss some starts, but I think Waka is a much, much safer bet, and I think you probably could get him cheaper and maybe even an opt-out in there or something because he did that with the Padres. I think you could get Waka for a better value than Seth Lugo.
Absolutely. I think here's the thing, though. Eflin was a starter. It wasn't a reliever. I want to become a starter. Zach Eflin has always been a starter. When he was a Philadelphia Philly, the guy had won 10 games multiple times, had hit 160 innings once before. He did hit a single season record for himself this past year, but we've already seen him do the 150, 150 innings, 150 strikeouts. He can actually do it. Lugo's never done it. Eflin is eons better, and I think a little bit younger, if I'm not mistaken. So Lugo's going to be 30. You said he just turned 34, Terry? Eflin's 30.
Yeah.
So, you know, somebody like that, I can't justify paying an older guy by 4-5 years, whatever, an extra mil or 2 mil over the course of, you know, 2 years or 3 years, an extra $6 million for somebody like that. It doesn't make sense. It's not a smart business decision. And like, we're talking about like, this is a business. That would be a bad business decision. That's like buying a used car with no floor. Why would you do it? I can't do Seth Lugo as a 4, maybe as a 3, maybe a couple drinks in, as a 2. Absolutely not, Terry. Shame. Absolutely.
No,
not.
No. When I said 2, I just meant the second guy. If we're signing 2 pitchers, hopefully he's the number 2.
Okay.
Yeah. No.
Not your number 2 starter.
He probably does top out as a number 3, but yeah, I'm not saying I love it, but it's better than anything Bloom brought in. I don't trust Waka staying healthy. I wouldn't want Michael Waka. If you could guarantee me he would make, or let's just put it at innings. If you could guarantee me 160, 170 innings out of him, okay, fine. I'll take another flyer on him. Michael Waka is a 1-year deal type guy for me also because of that. I would hate to be a year and a half in and he's injured again, you know, and just have all this remorse coming out of what we just did.
The only thing, Terry, is you're not getting 160 innings out of Seth Lugo. Like, if you look at last year, I think Lugo threw 12 more innings. So if you had to bet next year who throws more innings, would you pick Waka or Lugo?
I mean, last year was the first year Lugo could go a full season. Yeah, so it's hard. But we're in uncharted waters. Waka. I hate the uncharted waters.
December 4th, Michael Waka.
Oh, God, we're talking about Lugo and Waka. It's painful.
It's that sad.
It's so painful. But that's the name we're connected to. And I don't love it either. I don't love it. And I've said that all along. And I wouldn't go more than 2 years on Lugo. I would not, under any circumstances, go more than 2 years. If it's 3 years, I'm out. So that's that. John Heyman just had a tweet. Take that for what it's worth. Apparently, the Mets have said that. Uh-oh. No, let me pause on that. So, according to Heyman, also, different tweet, the Braves, Reds, and Diamondbacks are also in on Seth Lugo. So, that might give Charlie hope. The Red Sox were mentioned as well earlier. But so, there is a market for Seth Lugo. But getting back to the other Heyman tweet, the Mets' clear top choice, those were the words Heyman gave, is Yoshinobu Yamamoto. And he's the Yankees' clear top choice. So he's going to have a robust market. And we should be the top bidder. I mean, we need a guy like Yamamoto, but I'm just losing confidence by the day that we're going to be serious about it, and then we're going to outbid everyone else.
I think if it's going to be hard to outbid Steve Cohen, but there's no reason the Red Sox offer is not very comparable. And then essentially you're just trying to sell Yamamoto on the fact that the Mets are complete, just they're a mess right now. I mean, we'll see what happens this year, but last year was a joke, and the Red Sox have a history of winning. That's what you have to sell him on. You have to sell him on the city and the history. Can you do that? I don't know. I don't think the last 4 years help because they haven't been competitive. They haven't, you know, even shown the desire to win because of the lack of moves they've made. But there's no reason they can't go up into the mid to high 200s with an offer. If you don't want to go $350 million, if that's what Cohen's going to go, eventually I think there is a number where you go, that's kind of crazy for one starting pitcher who could easily break. But if it's 250 to 300, I don't see why you can't go in that area. That for a 25-year-old starting pitcher, I don't see why they can't do it. Again, Cohen's crazy. And if you're – the thing is, Yamamoto fits every single organization that wants to win right now and that has money, because you could put him in every rotation and he makes them instantly better. So every team should be in on him, but it really comes down to – can you convince him that this is the organization he should play for the next 5 years if there's an opt-out, or decade?
Charlie?
I mean, here's the thing. The Mets are just, they're incredible. And incredible in the bad sense. I mean, you have two starting pitchers that are almost collecting Social Security, making $43.3 million a year. You trade both of them. One of them ends up becoming a World Series winner. The other one, I'm happy he didn't, because it's the Astros and screw them. Nothing Micah said is wrong. Yamamoto does make any team, regardless of money, instantaneously better. But $250 million may not get it done. $275 may not get it done. It may exceed $300, depending on who is serious. So, yeah, we've seen Garrett Cole get, what was it, 320? Was it 324, I think? 9 years, 324, if I'm not mistaken. So, we could see 350 blow it out of the water, and then that ends it. I think, Terry, we've talked about this once, or I may have heard you say it. Honestly, I can't remember which show it was, but throwing a couple of opt-outs into a 10-year deal for $350 million, give them an opportunity to make more money, in after like the fifth and sixth year if he wants to test it. Why not? If the Red Sox don't get Yamamoto, I don't think they're going to get Snell. The Mets are rumored to be getting or in on Snell if they can't land Yamamoto. I don't think the Red Sox are going for Ohtani, and I'm not angry about that. It's scary to think that Ohtani could go back to the Angels, and Mike had a tweet earlier today. It could be the single – it was like – I don't want to misquote it. The dumbest single decision any player has ever made in sports, something like that.
Yep, that was it, and I believe it.
Yeah,
100%. But I'll let you keep going.
I could not agree with you more. But Yamamoto is going. The Red Sox are going to have to overpay to get Yamamoto. They're going to have to say, "Hey, we want to build a future for you here in Boston, and we want to build a successful franchise around you and make you the face of the Boston Red Sox. You and Rafi Devers." We would love to see the two of you together, you know, on the cover of like Red Sox magazine for the next 10 years. What do you think? Because he could go anywhere. I mean, what's it going to take? It's going to take Red Sox brass coming out, Devers coming out, probably, you know, Pedro and Poppy coming out and saying this is the best place to come play baseball. Otherwise, if you don't get Yamamoto, next year is going to look ugly, and someone like Seth Lugo, who's not sexy, better not be the sexiest addition to the team, because I'll be pretty upset again. But I'm going to continue being optimistic and saying we have a chance at Yamamoto and just keep putting that good energy into this one. Good energy. Terry.
So I don't have a ton different from the same stuff I've been screaming from the mountaintops, but signing Yamamoto gives the Red Sox instant credibility as a big market team again. It almost says we're back and we're committed. And number two, you mentioned all the wrong names in terms of recruiting him. Get Koji on the phone. Be like, Koji, do us a solid. Sell him on Boston. Dice K, come on, man. You want a ring with us. Help us get Yamamoto here so he can win a ring too. I'm sure the Poppies and the Pedros would be involved to some degree. But we should have the best recruiting edge of any team out there, really. I mean, unless he's like good pals with Kodai Senga, and he could be, I'm not sure. But his WBC teammate is already here in Boston. Yoshida. So yeah, so we'll see, but I hope we're at least serious. I'm going to be disappointed if he signs somewhere else and then we get these articles from sources saying the Red Sox never really went after him and he wasn't a priority. That would piss me off.
If Yamamoto signs for like $250 million, I will lose my mind. I will be angry that they are not willing to go that high and they're going to raise ticket prices. And like, it just, it's going to rub me such the wrong way, because there's no reason the Red Sox, who are one of the most wealthiest franchises in all of sports, cannot pay $250 million for a starting pitcher. And they haven't done it in terms of a pitcher since, I mean, Chris Sale back in 2019. That was a long time ago. We're going on 5 years. You know, there's no reason they can't do this. Absolutely no reason. Like I said, if it gets to 340, 350, if you get up there and you could convince me to go otherwise and say, well, go get Jordan Montgomery and go get somebody else and you can equal that for two guys. You could convince me with that. But I just – $250 million better not be the number. That's all I have to say.
Here's the thing, Micah, and this is terrifying to think about. What if it's less? What if it ends up being $200 million? How would you feel after that? If a team says, yeah, we'll give you 5 years, $200
million. That scenario has been kicked around, actually.
I mean, let's be honest, it could happen. It might be well under. Here's the thing, 30 years old, you've already made $200 million. You're in for one final payday. And assuming you've had 3.5, almost 4 years of relevance, you know there's going to be 6 or 7 stupid teams in Major League Baseball that are going to say, sure, let's give him 7 years and $300 million. Who cares? He's already made $200 million. At that point, it's just fun money.
Yeah, I feel like I would have to like really know the ins and outs of the offers, because like if someone offered him 5 and 200,
we're not gonna know that though.
I know, but like
right.
it would make sense like then to say, like, if you know what you're up against, like you can have 5 and 200, but let's go 10 and 325 with an opt out after 5. Give you, you know, you have to be creative with these types of deals if you're gonna land him. And I just hope that we see some creativity this offseason, whether it's, you know, through trades, through signings. There's been such little creativity over the last 4 or 5 off seasons, pretty much since they won the World Series, that I just, you know, what the Braves did was so creative to get Kelnick, who's a really young and talented player. And they got a pitcher. Like they do creative things. And I just want to see some creativity. It takes some guts to make some of these moves, but that's what you need to do if you're the shot caller for the Boston Red Sox. You have to have guts and creativity. And we did not see that with Heim Bloom at all. And I hope we see that with Craig Breslow. I'm not going to draw any crazy conclusions in the first 35 days or whatever he's been with the Red Sox, but that's what I want to see: creativity and just some guts to go out and make a move. And, you know, sometimes you don't have to necessarily win a trade. You just can't lose it. And I feel like with these trades, teams are so afraid of losing it and they view they have to win. Sometimes it can be a win-win for both teams, and that's okay. And that's what I want to see this offseason.
I thought we were going to get that with Bloom. I mean, you look at how the Marlins got Sandy Alcantara from the Cardinals for nobody, basically, and then the Rays did the same thing, got Randy Arozarena from the Cardinals for essentially nothing. That's what I want to see here. And what you mentioned, last night's trade for Kelenic and Gonzalez, the Rays are reportedly going to flip Gonzalez. They don't even want him. I think it was just they did it to get Kelenic, apparently, and so we'll see where he ends up. But Alex Anthopoulos is the best general manager in baseball. He's a mid-market team. He's not a big market team. You know, I tweeted that today and said, you know, true or false, is Alex Anthopoulos the best? A lot of people said Dombrowski. I don't think that's fair because he's got a much bigger budget. Andrew Friedman got mentioned. Same thing, much bigger budget. So we'll see. Speaking of creative trades, I put a really crazy one out today, and I know that there's probably a 1% chance it would go down, but we were going to discuss Juan Soto here for a few minutes. Here's a trade idea. Now, they're stuck on prospects. The Padres want to clean out the Yankees farm. Yankees are like, no way, not for 1 year with no guarantees we're going to be able to have them beyond that. Here's a crazy idea. Let's say the Yankees get Juan Soto and Xander Bogaerts. They have to take on the full Xander Bogaerts contract, though. So Juan Soto and Bogaerts go to the Yankees. The Padres get Giancarlo Stanton, DJ LeMahieu, and Everson Pereira, who's he's a top 5 or 10 Yankees prospect outfielder like Soto. I think he's a righty though. So that's $287 million that the Yankees are taking on for the 1 year of Soto and the remaining balance of Bogaerts. $287 million. The Padres are taking on the remaining $93 million for Stanton, the remaining $45 million for LeMahieu, and then getting a prospect. All of that money for Stanton and LeMahieu is off the books in 4 years. I think it makes a lot of sense. It's a crazy scenario. But yeah, a lot of people poo-pooed it, and that's fine. It's the winter, and, you know, that's what you have to do on social media. But let's talk about the Yankees realistically getting Soto here. Micah, will it happen, do you think?
If they're so hell-bent on not getting rid of like a Michael King, I just don't know what they're like. There are certain players I would not give up. I wouldn't trade Volpe for 1 year of Juan Soto. Like, I wouldn't do that. But some of the prospects, you know, the Yankees are not known for their position players really panning out in the big leagues. A couple of them have, but they, I feel like a lot of people go, whoa, look at this new Yankees prospect. And I just, a lot of them haven't panned out. And I think if you're going to acquire a Juan Soto, again, you have to give something up to get something. I know it's 1 year, and I don't expect the Yankees to give up what the San Diego Padres gave the Washington Nationals, because they had 2.5 years of Juan Soto services. So I don't expect a package like that. But if you're stuck on Michael King and maybe one other player, why would you not do that? You get Juan Soto, you get him in your building, you can show him the Bronx, and hopefully he has a massive year, and you go, look, you can do this, and you can build a legacy to the Hall of Fame as a New York Yankee. We're going to offer you an Aaron Judge type deal. I don't know why they wouldn't do that. And he's going to help them win games next year. I don't think the Yankees want to finish in fourth place again. So I think Juan Soto, as a Red Sox fan, Juan Soto to the Yankees is the scariest scenario I can imagine, because I think he would be perfect for the city. I don't think the pressure is going to get to him. The ballpark, I think he'd hit 50 home runs, and you pair him with Aaron Judge. I mean, that is probably the best 1-2 we've seen maybe in a decade or more. I just, that would be filthy. So if I'm the Yankees, Michael King is not going to be the reason why Juan Soto does not get traded to the Yankees.
Yeah. I don't think that 50 home runs is a high. I think 50 is going to be a baseline annually, because Yankee Stadium has the biggest joke of a ballpark in right field. It's up there with Sandy. It's up there with Houston's left field. I think both should be backed up, I don't know, 15 feet. I think they're both clown shows. You have players like Jose Altuve being relevant. He's a joke. This could be the most disgusting pair in baseball for years. Aaron Judge and Juan Soto combined, I mean, that is murderer's row with two bats. That's disgusting. And they could, I mean, if they were able to make it happen, sure. Is it going to be something where they're going to trade away Giancarlo Stanton? I don't think so. That's a lot of dead money for a player who's probably not going to play 70 games a season for the remainder of his career. Juan Soto is young. Mike already touched up on the product package that would come back to get that move done. I don't think the Yankees want Xander. You know, I don't think that's going to happen either. So if the Yankees want to be crafty, they're going to have to think of option one. We go for Yamamoto, we pass on Soto. Option two, we get Soto, we skip Yamamoto. Option three, we still do everything in our damnedest power to present Shohei Ohtani that the New York Yankees are the team to play for. And here's the thing. Whether you have Soto and Judge or Ohtani and Judge, it doesn't really matter. You have a left-handed hitter with clout power, you will not miss at Yankee Stadium. Either one of those guys at Yankee Stadium would hit 55, 60 home runs minimum a year. You would see multiple, oh, we almost had the home run record. Oh, we came so close. Oh my God, we got 70. We had two guys that got 60. That would happen. That can happen with these guys.
So I don't think that hypothetical I gave would happen. It would be a creative way to do some salary redistribution. you know, and that would be that. I wouldn't rule out, you know, a Stanton trade to a Southern California team, though. That's where he's from. Giancarlo Stanton, GM there, Brian Cashman, made some kind of disparaging comments about Stanton during the GM meetings in November, and it kind of fired up Aaron Judge. And so who knows if perhaps a deal could be worked out eventually. And the Dodgers, let's face it, they could use a Stanton guy. They're looking for a DH. So I think Turner makes the most sense for them. But who knows? Maybe something crazy could happen. They took Jason Hayward and got him to be somewhat serviceable. And he's going back
well,
there.
Well, Hayward has re-signed with the Dodgers, I believe, a one-year deal worth $9 million, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I
was just about to mention that.
Sorry.
I like the creativity, Terry. I thought it was a creative trade, and those are the types of deals that you see. I just don't know if all of that money could be worked. That's a ton of money.
It is.
But, you know, I could see a deal where maybe – I don't know how many more years LeMahieu has on his deal, but maybe they ship him out and a team pays for, I think it's a year or two left. You know, I could see something like
3 years left for LeMahieu.
Oh, 3 years, 45 total. There you go.
I could see someone eating that type of money, you know, with, you know, attaching a prospect or two to the deal. But the Stanton deal, I don't know. The problem is he's productive for the most part. Last year he was not, but in previous years he was pretty productive when he was on the field. But the problem is, you know, he's missing 40 or more games. It's just you can book it. And
right.
if what happened last year where he missed a lot of games and you got no production, if that's what he's going to be moving forward, that's a super scary scenario for $90+ million left.
He's got $118 million over the next 4 years. $118 million.
That's a lot of money.
Ouch.
So before I give my take on him real quick, Soto has 29 career at-bats at Yankee Stadium. Guess how many home runs? You're on mute, Charlie.
Seven.
Micah says seven. Charlie says...
I said zero when I was muted. One.
You were right when you were muted, Charlie.
Damn. Yeah,
he doesn't have any. So tiny sample size. Although his slugging percentage is, let's see, 862. So he must be rifling the ball. He's just not. Oh, I lied. What was I just looking at? No, wait a minute. Yeah, my apologies, Micah. You were.
Am
so
I
close.
Right with seven?
No,
right?
He's got five. I was looking at the triples category. It's a long list, so my eyes have to go all the way down, and I think I jumped the column. Okay, because I looked over at the slugging percentage, and it's definitely the slugging percentage. I'm like, how could it be 862 with no home runs? But yeah, okay, all right, my bad. So, let's see. I don't know what that ratio ends up being. What's 1/6? 1/6 of his at bats are. Home runs at Yankee Stadium. So here's the problem. The Padres have no leverage. He's owed $32 million for 1 year. And he's a Boris guy. There's no certainty that he's going to sign. So, and Micah, you mentioned Aaron Judge type money. He's getting probably Ohtani type money at 25. He could get a 15-year deal, literally. So he's going to get over 500, and and everybody knows the Padres are completely handcuffed. I don't even think handcuffed is the word. They're like hogtied right now with a bunch of massive contracts. That Machado one, not looking good. I mean, long-term, he's been fine the last few years, but still through his age 40, 41 season. So the Padres have no leverage here. The Yankees can wait until February to make this deal and then get him at their price. So I don't see what the rush is here.
So at Yankee Stadium, I'm looking at this and I'm curious what you were looking at. So I see four home runs and nine RBIs at Yankee Stadium in 23 at-bats.
I'm showing what side are you on?
MLB reference. If he's got four home runs and 23 at-bats, that's terrifying.
What am I looking at?
if that's the case, that's a little less than one out of every five.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm looking at opponent. So my bad.
So
I'm really botching it tonight.
No, you're fine. You're totally on it. You're good. But four home runs in seven games. He's hitting a home run every other game. You play 80 games at Yankee Stadium. You're hitting 40 bombs there. That's insane.
Yeah.
Soto's the guy that, like, he's the type of bat that the Yankees haven't had, I feel like, almost since like Mark Teixeira, where you have a lefty who can just hit you 35, 40 home runs. They've really been lacking that left-handed power. And I wouldn't even really consider Juan Soto a major power bat because it's not all he does. He hits for doubles. He can hit for average. But you put him in Yankee Stadium, he's a premier power bat all of a sudden. That's the type of player they've been looking for. And you're not going to find Juan Soto on the open market at a reasonable price. I mean, obviously they're going to have to overpay, but they could at least get his services next year before having to give him all that money. And maybe they could work out an extension. Who knows? But I view it as it's better to have the player in your dugout for at least 1 year than to have to pitch him on the idea that we just finished fourth place 2 years in a row, but we're going to be good with you now on our team. I think you go get him now and you worry about the extension next year, because I think the Yankees should be able to pay him.
And another thing to love about Juan Soto, 2023, guess how many games he played?
162.
2022, 153, 151 the year before that. 2020, who cares? 2019 was 150 games. I think that was his first full season anyway.
He likes to play baseball, I guess.
He's the anti Xander Bogaerts. Baseball does not make him tired. And you know,
he's also the anti Giancarlo Stanton as well. So
yeah.
Yeah.
If he was in the Fenway dugout and Alex Cora told him, "Hey, you got the day off," he'd probably be like, "No, you take the day off. We'll take the bench coach today."
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would never pay. They're going to say he's going to get $500 million. I don't know if he really will. Maybe it ends up being $470, $480. But when you're talking like 15 years, that it's easy to get to $500, really, with that many years.
How much did Mike Trout sign for?
$425.
Because I definitely think he beats Mike Trout. I think that I would put money on that he gets a better deal than
that. He declined basically that exact deal from the Nationals before they traded him.
Yeah, I think he turned down, what, $450?
$425.
$425? Okay. Yeah. So I think he'll beat that.
It's literally insane that he turned down that kind of money, because what are you going to do with that amount that you wouldn't already be able to do with like $400 million?
Exactly.
And it's just so dumb.
The scary thing is if you're the Yankees, this could be a fear. What if you acquire him and he goes absolutely bonkers and hits like 58 home runs, and then he hits free agency after a monster MVP year? Like, it's going to only boost his value that much more. And maybe that goes through their mind where we're like, we're going to give up prospects now and we might not be able to keep him because he just takes off as a New York Yankee.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that could boost his value and send it out of control. Here's another thing I'm looking at here, and we can wrap shortly after. There appears to be three or four teams in on Ohtani: Dodgers, Cubs, Giants, and the Blue Jays keep getting mentioned. That sounds really far-fetched to me, but I guess we have to put them in there if that many writers are going to connect them. Whichever one signs Ohtani, that means there's only three teams left next season for Soto, presumably, I would say. I mean, why would you be more motivated for Soto, who only does half of what Ohtani does?
Well, I think the Mets will 100% be in on Juan Soto.
Agreed.
I would bet that absolutely, because even if they go out and sign Yamamoto, These are the types of players that I think Steve Cohen is going to be like, I want him because I'm getting all of his prime years. I will pay for that. I think the Mets will put themselves in the Juan Soto conversation over the Ohtani conversation just because of sheer age. I think you can sell a billionaire on signing a player when he's turning 26 as opposed to signing a 30-year-old pitcher slash position player who has had two Tommy John surgeries. That's just easy math right there.
You make a good point because Soto is the perfect counter move to Judge. And Pete Alonso's great. I love him, but he's not, he doesn't balance that out, you know, compared to Judge. So go ahead, Charlie.
I was just going to say, when you look at Shohei Ohtani's numbers too, let's not forget that this is a guy that missed 25, 26 games and still had 44 homers. He was just like absolutely locked in. It just didn't matter what you threw at him. It was going over the fence. He's just incredible. That's it.
Right. Yep. I guess we'll end it on that note. Expect at least one more show this week, possibly two, if things get hot and heavy. Doesn't look like anything is super imminent with the Red Sox. If the Mets are a dance partner, though, you know, you never know with Jerry DePoto. I mean, trading is I think he likes trading players more than he likes winning because he's made the most trades of anyone in the last 4 or 5 years. So has yet to work out for him outside of one legitimate playoff appearance, but we'll see. So everyone have a great start to your week. Take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.